Bring yourself back online.
Remember. Welcome back to Freeze All Motor Functions, a Westworld podcast that doesn't sound like anything to me and doesn't take itself too seriously, presented by Bolin Media. We are here today to break down and digest Season 4, Episode 2 of HBO's Westworld. I am your host, Jared Borislow, known to many as J-Bone, joined as always by the assistant to the Deputy Assistant Attorney General on Taco Bell Affairs, Mr. Ross Bolin.
What a title. Well, welcome to me.
Is that elected, Ross? Is that an elected position?
It is, yes. Thank you to my voters.
And I'm also joined by the woman who probably read every one of Emily Dickinson's works on the 4th of July instead of having fun so that she could understand this episode's description, Serena. Serena, what's up?
Hey, happy to be here. How was your 4th of July?
I worked on it like a true American. As Ross Bolin said, there's nothing more American than working.
I am a real American. Yeah, no, we worked. It was tight. We got it in. You know how it is.
We got it in. Don't say it. What? You can't say it like that. Ross, how many times did you listen to or watch Team America, World Police, and its songs yesterday?
Zero times.
What?
Zero times, Jerry.
America, fuck yeah.
I actually watched the episode of Westworld yesterday. I did not watch on Sunday.
Oh.
Yeah.
How was that?
Was the exact same.
It didn't change anything
literally
at all?
Literally nothing changed.
Oh. Well, Serena, yeah. You're still in Alabama.
I am still in Alabama for one more recording session.
How many different... Okay, so were you in Alabama last time as well?
Yes.
Okay, I couldn't remember. I thought this was like the third different location you'd recorded in the three episodes we had done for season four so far, and I was really impressed by that. Now, I'm just only moderately impressed.
Well, I did the coverage of the event in New York, and then I came back to LA for 36 hours and recorded there, and then I hopped on a plane to Alabama. So there have been three locations.
Okay, that's what it was.
Okay, he actually is right about that.
So I'm back to being really impressed.
Well, what people don't understand is Serena's actually on the Freeze All Motor Functions United States tour. So if you want to go watch her record live, she probably has a window in a room, and you can just look through it.
All you got to do is find the address.
Tickets are $500. You can Venmo me at Jared Boris.
It's like GeoGuessr. You just got to figure out where Serena is or Carmen San Diego.
Yep. So go to YouTube, look and see if you can recognize where she is based on her room. Don't do that. That's probably illegal in some way. All right. Let's jump right into breaking down the season four premiere. Wait. Fuck.
No.
This is not the premiere.
Second
this is
episode.
The second episode. Sometimes I forget to change things in my rundown. Episode 2.
Dumbass.
Of season 4 of Westworld. The title of Westworld Season 4, Episode 2 is Well Enough Alone. And the description...
And let's just walk away from it there, Jared. Let's just walk away from the title there. Now, what do you have?
Well, the description is, I heard a fly buzz when I died. So I think the episode title is in reference to the phrase, leave well enough alone, which means stop disturbing, interfering with, or trying to improve someone or something. A phrase certainly lived by Char Loris this episode as she and her Man in Black host destroyed literally everyone who stood in their way. It's also a phrase that applies to Christina, who can't leave the whole Peter situation alone and then goes on a mission alone. And it also applies to Maeve and Caleb as they continue on their mission to hunt who's hunting them.
Wow.
Wow.
Multifaceted meaning to
it. It really is.
Title
more,
this week.
Unlike the last one where it turned out...
That was hellacious. Yeah.
The whole bird thing didn't really come into play,
what
but
in
it
the
does.
Hell was that?
But the bird thing does come into play this episode. We'll talk about that later. Now, as far as the episode description goes, at face value... Multiple characters in this episode hear flies buzzing when they die. Anastasia and Navarro, the deputy assistant to the regional manager or whatever. However, as I mentioned earlier, there's also an Emily Dickinson poem titled I Heard a Fly Buzz When I Died that I have no clue how to decipher because I don't like poetry. I think poetry is the crutch of people who like to write but don't like to write very much.
Wow.
Serena, I know you've read this poem. What's it about?
It's about life, and I think on a simple read, it's about the transitioning from life to death. But what's interesting about it is that the speaker appears to be dead. So you are getting a piece about death from someone who's already dead.
Okay, just to be clear, the description for the episode on HBO Max's app is a line from this Emily Dickinson poem?
It's the title of it. And
it's
a line.
Title
from,
of
and
it.
A
okay.
line from,
okay.
yes.
Okay.
But it's I Heard a Fly Buzz When I Died, which I guess to Serena's point, to hear it when you died implies that you're already dead. So it kind of, I think, shows that you are alive after the fly buzzed in your eye, which means that you're like in this case, the people who died, the humans who died because the fly went in their eye are still alive, but this time as people controlled by the robot hosts.
Uh-huh.
Oh, very poignant. Serena, first poignant of the season. Wow.
Wow.
Took a lot of episodes to get there. We got another cold open. How do you guys feel about this? Season one, I don't know if we got any cold opens. And if we did, it was like maybe one or two in 10 episodes. Are we getting cold opens every episode now?
I don't know. I wouldn't really I wouldn't know, Jared. I didn't make the show. Serena, your thoughts?
I would imagine they'll mix it up. I don't think it's going to be straight cold opens.
Yeah, probably
I feel
not
like
every episode.
Working on an hour long drama, we use them for emphasis, and it's definitely not every episode. So I feel like Westworld being in a similar genre will probably go down the same path.
And historically, HBO shows, like you just said, they tend to pick their spots for when the cold open is utilized for effect. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, we got another cold open here. Personally, I am not really a fan of cold opens. Like, I think they have a place, like, once or twice a season for, like, very key things they want to hype you up for. Like, oh, shit, look what just happened. Oh, the intro, this is going to be a crazy episode. But, like, this is, I mean, yeah, this was, like, an interesting one, but, like,
you definitely don't want it to be overdone, because, like you said, it kind of takes away the impact of one that's extreme, that makes sense.
Yes.
Like, sometimes you see a cold open, and then the credits, or the opening sequence starts, and you go, yeah, that was a great use of a cold open. And then there's times like this episode, where it's more just like, okay, that was sort of just for fun, I guess.
Yeah, and also, for me, like, there's something to watching an HBO show, and it going, and then the intro music starts, and you're like, fuck yeah. I'm in for an hour of fucking fun.
It's because it's not TV, Jared. It's HBO.
It's not TV. It's HBO. Also, every time that I hear and then the intro music doesn't immediately start play and it goes into a cold open, my brain has to fill that with some sort of intro. So it just goes bum, bum, bum. Ba-na-na-na-na-na.
Well, it's always kind of ruined in the era of streaming. It's just it operates a little bit differently, right? Because it's like I expect if there's a cold open that when I click on the episode, it is going to start. That is not the case anymore.
You get
now
an ad.
It runs some other show that they're trying to promote that you've never heard of before that show for 20 seconds, and then so it's not as like surprising when you get the cold open. And for that reason, yeah, I wish they would. You know,
that's a really good point. The cold open doesn't really, it's almost just like another ad.
Holster that pistol.
Holster it. Honestly, the Curb Your Enthusiasm music may have been apropos here, because in this cold open, we got the season premiere of Clementine, who appears to be living in Spain, but it was very short lived as the man in black just instantly killed her after she would not reveal Maeve's location.
And then she goes to become his little servant, it appears, right?
Personal assistant.
So we're kind of flashing back and forth through like how this, whatever's going on this season, sort of came to be, right? Because we pretty quickly see her in the service of the man in black.
Yes. Yes. That's a great point. And are they trying to fuck with us and be like, oh, do you know if the real man in black or the host man in black killed Clementine? Because clearly this was in the past.
I mean, I don't think so. I think it's like the host man in black assembling his like forces, sort of.
Agreed. I totally agree with that.
There's definitely still some confusion about whether or not the man in black is alive. I hope this episode cleared that up some.
It did.
Because I was getting some text messages from friends and I was just like, no. It's a robot. He's not, it's a robot, damn it, from about episode one.
Yes.
So in this one, we'll get to that, obviously. But yeah, so Clementine in Spain, it seems like everybody was scattered, sort of, right?
Yes, they were. Yeah, you're right. I mean, we had Maeve just hiding in the woods. Caleb with his wife and kids, you know, further away
off
from Maeve.
Wherever, yeah.
We still don't know where the fuck Bernard and Ashley Stubbs are.
Still haven't seen them. Two episodes. Yeah. I mean, it's full, like I said last week, Jason Bourne style. They all went off remote, off the grid, trying to avoid any version of what we're now getting back into. Yeah.
Yeah. Serena, any thoughts there?
Yeah, I feel like we're getting our old friends brought back one at a time in each episode. So I was going to say about the cold open, you could read it two ways. One, both cold opens have been about someone that the man in black uses as a pawn, or two, it's like a character. And although the Hugo guy didn't really last long, but I have a feeling we'll see at least one of them next episode.
It seems that they probably took a cue from the audience and critical response to season three. And we're like, okay, we've strayed too far from home here.
From
and,
God's
and
great light.
Yeah, and where we started and where we had our success. And like I've always said, you know, shows, great shows in particular that have great showrunners and great writers, they always have the opportunity to get back to what made them special in the first place. And one of the reasons that after episode two, I'm even more excited for season four is it seems they're really tracking that. Like you just said. Sort of feels like we're meeting all of our old friends again, one by one. Well, then it would make sense to hold a couple of the people we're most looking forward to seeing, Bernard in particular, back until the last reveal, right? Until the last possible moment. In this case, it's pretty shocking to not see him through two episodes. So now we're really looking forward to seeing him, right? It's building the intensity a little bit. And we get some of them in the preview for next week or whatever, but we got that last week and the week prior in the trailer or whatever before the season. So who knows when Bernard will actually show up. But in terms of what they've put together so far for season four, it feels like, you know, obviously with what we're going to get to talking about the rest of episode two, that they're trying to recreate the magic of season one, probably in a more effective way than they have ever since.
Yes. So in the cold open, we then cut to Maeve and Caleb, who are on their way to go meet that senator that was mentioned last episode. And by the way, we here at FAMF do not condone drinking and driving as seen perpetrated by Maeve. Just, it's against the law.
Was she drinking and driving?
Yeah. She was like shooting the shit with Caleb and just like popped the cork off some sherry and just starts chugging it. Wait, what is she
Can
like?
Can they get fucked up though?
Is she like a Futurama robot? Does she need alcohol to survive?
That's what I'm saying. Like, is it a Bender situation where, you know, Bender seems to become intoxicated when he drinks, you know?
Even though he needs it to survive.
Or is it like a Pirates of the Caribbean thing where they're just kind of pouring it down and it's just running straight through,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah, it comes out the ribcage.
The skeleton or whatever. Like, yeah, what are we dealing with here? Is that doing anything to Maeve?
Maybe we'll find that out later on this season. Maybe it'll be like a dual Bernard reveal and alcohol and host relationship.
Is she
reveal.
Actually like pulling it? I didn't notice. You know how in a lot of old school movies, they'll show you a driving scene and whoever's doing the driving is just sort of like unrealistically turning the wheel back and forth like this to make it appear they're driving with both hands up and down, even though they're going straight. Well, we're in the future here, and I assume that the self-driving car has even further advanced than it is in 2022. Is she even having to do anything behind the wheel? That's the other question. Maybe it's legal to drink and drive at this point because there's no actual driving.
That's true.
Being done.
Maybe when the humans took control of the world from Rehoboam, they were like, first order of business. Drinking and driving's legal.
Elon finally got around the DMV, the driving rulemakers, the National Highway Association, who's been screwing him with his whole self-driving label. And you no longer have to interact with the vehicle every 10 seconds like you do right now.
Serena, you have any thoughts on drinking and driving?
I do not condone it either.
Thank you.
Thank you for your statement.
We quickly find out that Maeve knows, because of her electronics control capabilities, that neither the senator nor his wife, Anastasia, are human. They're, in fact, hosts.
Oh, shit.
Yeah.
Which, this was a big reveal.
It was, even though we only knew them for about 5 seconds. Maeve takes care of them in classic Maeve fashion, likes to absolutely destroy them. And I must note, the most jarring thing about this episode is that the senator from The Office plays a senator in Westworld.
Love that. Yeah, love the crossover from The Office and Westworld. I saw some memes already that were a mix between the two, and I was just like, oh my God, come on.
People were doing the whole, like, The Office, find the difference between these two pictures, and
yeah,
it's the Senate,
yeah.
Which is like a double Office inception.
Yes.
Now, I will say, this is just another case of this happening, because Jan from The Office plays a Jan in Only Murders in the Building.
Wow.
Which is, again, jarring, but nothing will ever, to me, be as weird as Nicole Kidman playing Alexander Skarsgård's wife in Big Little Lies, and then his mom in The Northman.
And oh, The Northman! I almost said The Viking. Yeah,
that was so weird to me. You can't do that. You can't have the same actors play wives and or, you know, spouses and then a mother son to me. Serena, thoughts about this either this senator reveal thing?
Well, I just have to go on the record and say I was wrong, because last episode I was so sure that when they said the senator in California, it was going to be someone we knew, and it definitely wasn't. So,
oh yeah, that's actually really big of you to admit when you were wrong, because nobody probably would have called you out on that.
I like to keep track so that when I'm right, I can also gloat.
Oh, see, I don't keep track so that I just get to gloat when I'm right.
I should take your method into consideration.
It was interesting seeing this unfold, though, because I, for one, I'm like, okay, well, Caleb's dead, right? Like, Maeve is having a hard time fighting this host, and dude remains alive, somehow does not get his head ripped off fighting a host for several minutes while Maeve is dealing with the other one, the senator's wife, just beating the shit out of Caleb. And then, two, Maeve's powers don't seem to work. There's been updates, she says, that William has upgraded his henchmen, and apparently she's having to do a little bit. I'm imagining the way this works, right? She, like, sort of has access to the network.
The mesh network.
And so she, the way she used to go in there and, like, the button she used to hit in the little mesh network was pretty easy before for her to take over. Freeze all motor functions, right?
Oh!
Yeah, but this time she has to do, like, a little more digging. She has to go, like, a little further into the... She ends up being like, oh, it's actually not that big of a fucking deal. I figured it out. Yeah. They just, like, switched it up a little bit on me.
Well, her new thing is she has to shoot them in the dick, apparently.
I thought it was his kneecap. Did she shoot him in
she
the dong?
She shot him in the dick.
No, she shot him in the dick.
It's the South Park. Oh dude, you shot him in the dick.
Ah, that's not cool. No, but robot, though, right? So, like, you know.
Yeah, I guess. What's he using that thing for?
What's that about? It's not for reproduction.
Do you think that's what it is, though? Is that how she was able to eventually use Frizzell motor functions on him after shooting him in the penis?
No, I think it was the mesh network thing or whatever. She just had to, like, weasel her way a little further with her hackskis.
Yeah. Like, it kind of looked like she was concentrating a little bit harder there.
Just a little harder, you know? Yeah. Slightly harder.
So Maeve and Caleb then interrogate the senator, and they discover that he is one of 250 emissaries of a New World Order, which isn't that what they call New World Order, like, wrestling fans?
I believe so.
And they also discover that the Charlotte Hale version of Dolores, a.k.a. Charloris, or Charloris, had the host senator kill the real senator, and the host Anastasia was badly injured. And then they have the host, or the real Anastasia, sent to a barn.
With all the other livestock.
Yeah.
So just to be clear, yeah. Charlotte here, Charlotte Hale, is Dolores, right?
Yes.
Original Dolores. Right?
No, one of the, not the original Dolores, one of the Doloreses.
The evil Dolores.
One of the Doloreses that the original Dolores created.
Evil
She created
Dolores.
Many Doloreses in season two. One of them ended up being this one that turned out to be evil.
Okay. But it is not Charlotte Hale. It is a host with a version of Dolores inside of her. Is Charlotte in charge of William?
Yes.
So she's running the show on the dark side.
Yes.
Here.
Okay. Charlotte Hale is Darth Vader.
Right.
Charlotte Hale is Darth Vader.
William is well, I'd say Charlotte Hale is the Emperor, and William is like her Darth Vader.
Yeah. Is Emperor Palpatine who's in charge of it all?
The Emperor. Darth Vader's his bitch. Why are you looking at her? I know Star Wars.
I don't know. She knows a lot about shit. Okay. I don't know enough about Star Wars. Whatever.
I do.
Charlotte is the big one in charge, which I guess is the Emperor. Emperor?
Yeah, it's the Impeter.
Impeter. What's his name
it's
again?
When you're an impotent emperor.
Count Dooku? Yeah. Is that his name? Count Dooku?
Count Dookie.
Count Dookie. Yeah. So, host senator kills real senator. Host Anastasia badly injures real Anastasia. Real Anastasia sent to live in a barn.
Kept alive.
Kept
they're
alive.
They're doing this with some of them.
Yeah.
Not sure what that's about.
Now, some pacing really stood out to me here. At the end of episode one, Maeve thinks it's William behind all this. And now with the start of episode two, she realizes that it is Charloris. Do we think Maeve thinks it's a Man in Black host or the real Man in Black teaming up with Charloris? Do you think after she sees that the Man in Black is with Charloris, she's like, oh, I know that's a Man in Black host. Or does she think it's a real Man in Black? Yes.
If you can't tell, does it really matter?
It doesn't really matter, but also... she seems to have the ability to determine whether or not a being is a host or a human. But so you would think she'd pretty quickly be able to decipher, like, actually, there's no humans over there.
But she's not in their presence. She's watching it on TV, you know?
I can't remember back to if she would have reason to believe William was dead. But to Serena's point, in the grand scheme of this show at this point, I don't think it matters.
See, I wonder if it's like my Judah, right? Because I'm Jewish. If I'm around somebody, I can be like, oh, like, you're Jewish. I get Jewish vibes. But if I just see a person on TV, I can't tell if they're Jewish or not. So maybe that's similar to how Maeve's whole thing works. About.
Maybe.
Well, wouldn't it be that she can see them in the mesh network? Like, if she looks at someone and she's like, oh, I can't tap into anything in their head, that's a human?
See, I don't know, because when she goes into the host's, like, control units, it's all like grainy and staticky, you know?
Beep, boop, bop.
Beep,
that's
boop,
true.
Bop. Speaking of beep, boop, bop, this episode of Freezall Motor Functions is brought to you by Manscaped. Fellas, if you're like most men during the summer, you're more concerned with your clothes than what's going on under them, so it's pretty likely that your carpets need cleaning, drapes need dusting, and your lawn needs mowing. Wink, wink. Well, Manscaped are the global leaders in below-the-waist grooming, and they have the best tools for cleaning up down there. Time to clear out your bush and join the other 4 million men worldwide who trust Manscaped by going to manscaped.com for 20% off plus free shipping with our exclusive promo code FAMF, F-A-M-F,
FAMF,
FAMF. Ross, you look like your groin is absolutely disgusting, so listen up. Manscaped has the full package you need for grooming yourself right up, the Performance Package 4.0, and here's the skinny. To start off, use the Manscaped Lawnmower 4.0 trimmer to get the most precise shave on your downstairs hedges. Then, clear your holes and smell the spring air with the Weed Whacker. This nose and ear hair trimmer uses skin-safe technology, which helps prevent nicks, snags, and tugs in those delicate holes. Rouse's holes are very delicate.
They are delicate, Jared. I love their Weed Whacker. Use it on my nose. Used it this morning. Use it on my ears. Use all their tools. Manscaped's phenomenal. Get yourself some Manscaped. Take care of your body.
After
hair.
Ross clears out his delicate holes, he then makes sure to get rid of his foul ball smell with the Crop Preserver and Crop Reviver.
That's right, Jared. I have incredibly smelly testicles, and they need to be preserved and revived on a regular basis in order to maintain freshness.
Yep. Ross keeps his boys from sticking to his leg and then leaves them smelling like fresh flowers with the Crop Preserver and Crop Reviver. And then he finishes off with the perfect razor for the finest shave on your face, the Plow 2.0, because you can't use the downstairs razor on the face.
I do. I do. You might notice that I have facial hair, but there's hairs that grow on other areas of my face where I don't want them to be, so I have to shave them off.
Mm-hmm.
I know that might be shocking.
It is shocking. Get 20% off plus free shipping with our code FAMF at manscaped.com. That's 20% off plus free shipping with code FAMF, F-A-M-F, at manscaped.com.
Testicles.
Testicles. Okay, so William and Charloris, again, we don't know. We know because of the reveal at the end of the episode, right, that this William that is with Charloris is a host. Do you guys agree with that?
Yes.
Yeah, it'd be pretty fucking stupid not to.
Yes. Now, I will say, Serena, if you want to take another W, you did say that it looks like your theory, if I remember correctly, was that Charloris discovered that you cannot make a replica of a human without potentially having the actual body and brain of that human, because as we saw, the fidelity tests kept failing in season 2 with William trying to make Mr. Delos, you know, a host human, wasn't working, had to keep incinerating him in that incinerator. So your theory was that maybe Charloris discovered that you need to keep the kind of the actual human body, like, some preserved somehow. And by all intents and purposes, it looks like that's what's happening here. Is that what you think?
I think I said that to you in a text message, but I don't know if I said that on the air, but I would happily post the receipts. That was my theory. Yes.
You're saying just to, cause that was confusing as fuck. What you're saying, in order for them to be able to make a host version of a person, the person has to be present, or they have to have access to the body. So then how did they make the senator and the senator's wife?
We don't know what they did with the bodies, I guess.
Well, they made them before they killed them.
Well, maybe,
like, they brought them in, like, hey, look, it's the other you. You're fucked now. Clink, you know?
Well, we saw they slit the man in Black's throat before they put him in that machine. So I think quote unquote killing them. Maybe that machine keeps you alive, but cuts your claws off, as they say, so that you're like alive, but like not really. Like you can't actually do anything. You're just kind of a body. Thoughts, Serena?
I also think it's one thing to be like a created in the image. Like anything can look like something else. I feel like with the Man in Black and when they were trying to do Delo Sr., they're actually trying to preserve some aspect of the essence of who they are. I mean, obviously he is a pawn of Charloris, but there's a lot of elements. Like he needed to be able to access a lot of who he actually was in that data. And I'm willing to bet that the other clones that they're making, they already have data from them going to the park. Remember the whole, like, you have to, they, then this comes in later in the episode where they like sign away consent to their data. I'm willing to bet that a lot of these clones that they're making, who are these wealthy, high ranking members of government, have been to the park at some point. So they do have their data to base some things off of. That's my theory.
Yeah, there's also a difference between, like, I mean, take for example, Charlotte Hale, who looks exactly like Charlotte Hale, but is not Charlotte Hale anymore. There's a difference between creating an exact clone of somebody or installing their consciousness into a host versus just creating a host that looks exactly like that person.
Yeah.
And we don't know, you know, on our where we're at as an audience, exactly to what purpose they're doing this yet. So it could be that because of what Serena's talking about, because of the parks, that they've been able to collect all this data, perhaps a lot of senators and high-ranking government officials visited there, and they've been able to create actual host versions with some level of their consciousness to really to make it look like they're them. This it reminds me of, and this is going to sound funny, but The Great Mouse Detective. It's a Disney movie where the villain Ratigan, who's a giant rat who doesn't like to be called a rat, he makes a robotic version of the Queen of England and installs her instead of the Queen of England. And in the movie The Great Mouse Detective, the robot is janky as fuck. It is like so obvious. It's like it like goes out there like spitting like, you know, coils off and shit. And this is a similar concept where they're creating government officials, except they're then installing, in some cases, the like a senator and his wife. You're going to need that robot to act like that person, to look like that person, to be pull off the mannerisms. So I'm assuming the park data comes into play there, like Serena brought up. But it makes me wonder if we'll ever get a level of detail in this show that gives us answers to those kind of questions. Like, how did they pull this off? Like, yeah. You know what I mean? Because that would take a lot of storytelling and time to show us. I don't know if it's necessary. It's kind of more fun for us to have these conversations and speculate about how they're pulling it off rather than give us all the answers. So we'll see.
The Great Mouse Detective. You just referenced that.
That's right.
Maybe one of the most obscure. How do you remember like the names of the characters in these movies?
Oh, I've probably watched The Great Mouse Detective like 50 times in my life and probably 10 times in the past decade. So I'm good.
Okay.
Yeah.
So Clem, as we know, is now the personal assistant to the Man in Black. And she turns away this guy Navarro, who's like the assistant to the regional manager or whatever. But she can't turn away the vice president. And the vice president meets up with William on a golf course.
The vice president of what?
United States.
Is that what we're supposed to assume? Okay.
Yes. Yeah.
So the United States exists in some capacity.
Yeah. Yeah. And he says that. Navarro says he's there with the power of the United States.
Yeah, that's great. We're still out there.
And still doing the
still
damn thing.
Still surviving in 2050, whatever.
So the vice president tells William he's hearing some wild theories about him from a guy in the Justice Department. And he's not indulging them, but he is upset that William is starting back up his business on American soil. It notably failed very badly on Chinese soil. So he's like, bruh, like, we're not going to really, like, get you in trouble for all that shit you did in China, but, like, just don't bring that shit here, man. And then, apparently, the Man in Black is the best golfer since Kim Jong-il.
This shit was hilarious. Yeah, this is one of the things I was getting text messages about, and I was like, listen, he's a robot. He's a robot. My buddy was like, I don't even think the robots could do that. I'm like, they can. Just did. We watched it happen. Like, he hit three hole-in-ones. That was hilarious, though. It was a great scene just to kind of watch the vice president, like, you know, oh, shit, this is not what I thought it was situation. Like, what is this guy? What's the deal with him? It's interesting that the U.S. government has some level of information about what William is up to and that they've always turned a blind eye when he was doing it overseas, right? That's pretty, I think, typical of how our government tends to do things with large corporations and billionaires and such. And yeah, now that he's going to be trying to do it on their soil, obviously the vice president and the U.S. government are concerned. And when this conflict arises, you're like, what's he going to do about this? And then pretty quickly, if you keep the wheels turning in your head, you're like, oh, well, he's just going to start replacing all these people.
Yeah.
With hosts, versions of them.
Especially when the vice president's like, yeah, I didn't bring much security here. I was like, oh, he's fucking dead.
What a dumbass.
Why would you do that? You brought two Secret Service agents.
You're the vice president, guy. What are you doing? What are you thinking? You already knew a little bit about what this guy's got going on, and you rolled in there with two dudes? You should have brought the whole fucking army.
Yeah. I think it was a dude and a chick, actually.
A steak.
So, yeah.
Chicks can be dudes.
True. Now, William tells the vice president that he's a weak little bitch boy puppet man who cannot stop him. And then he kills him, presumably to replace him with a host, as we find out later in the episode he does do.
Yeah, you can't just whack the VP and not plug somebody else in there, you know?
Yeah. Do you think he already had him printed?
People would notice. Probably. I mean, it seems like he's got this pretty well thought out. And he wasn't all that concerned when the guy was visiting, right? So it's like, I think he knew what was going down.
You guys seen Dexter?
Well, and he...
Go on, Serena.
When he first turned away the guy from the Justice Department, I felt like it was a plan. Like, they were going to send away everyone until they came back with the person that he wanted. Because when the vice president did show up, he said something like, we knew you were coming.
Great point. I feel
like part of the plan was, like, keep pushing away these small potatoes guys until we get the big guy, and then we can do the switcheroo.
Yeah, obviously it makes sense that he'd want to install power at the highest possible level. So if he can get the vice president himself to show up, that's a great point. Yeah, that's probably exactly what he did. And it just makes you wonder, like gets brought up in this episode that William, she says, like, you created a thing that controlled all of us. And she's talking about Westworld, of course. This is Dolores in the body of Charlotte Hale speaking to William. But it's interesting to think about this concept. She's like, now we're going to do that to you. But it seems like what they're doing, or what William is doing at Charlotte's behest, is to install as many hosts in the government as possible as a means to take over, right? So it would just be another version almost of Rehoboam, where you've got all these people running your it's an interesting parallel to what we have going on in society, where it feels like, for a lot of Americans especially, I can only really speak for our country, where it doesn't feel like the government represents us, right? And what we've got going on a real people, everyday person level. And that's the situation that now this world in Westworld is facing, where you're going to have a bunch of robots as your government. They obviously don't give a shit about regular people.
Yes.
Right?
Actively.
Right.
So, Ross, I have two lines, and Ross and Serena, two lines I want you to judge here. William, talking to the VP, drops the line, "We are all alone," which, Ross, you're a big "you are not alone" guy.
It made me laugh. Yeah, he's like, "We're all alone." And I was like, that's the opposite of what I say. That made me feel good and white hat in my soul.
Yeah, because everybody knows Ross's catchphrase is "you are not alone." That and "get over here, Jared. I'm going to spank that tight little ass."
Yeah, because I've got a lot of catchphrases then.
What did you think of this line, Serena?
Well, I felt like it was a great HBO, like, one of these guys handshake moments, because it made me think of the Corrado Soprano line where he says, "Each of us is alone in the fucking universe." So it was like a nudge at the other shows in the HBO canon.
It's wow. That's also just like such a classic, I don't want to say pessimist trope, but it's definitely an outlook on the world, right? To think of it like, no matter what, you die alone. There's a lot of people who look at it that way. Like, no matter what you build, no matter what you do, no matter what family, friends, that at the end, when it's just you, you die alone, right? And it's just an interesting, morbid line from William. I don't know why he delivers this type of shit, though, because it's like, doesn't he just murder this dude immediately?
Yeah, but it's...
He's so dramatic.
You got to do the dramatic thing before he kills somebody.
For sure. I mean, it's just always funny. He's like spitting this like wisdom and deep lines of knowledge at people he's about to whack.
The VP also doesn't know he is alone, because both his Secret Service members are dead.
Yeah, very dead.
So the other line is "fuck you very much," which I think is a great insult.
Not a new one. Definitely been used before, but love it. "Fuck you very much" is a great line. Yeah.
This is said by Navarro, the assistant to the regional manager, right as he gets into his car, before he is attached to his car seat by Clementine by the neck, which... it seems terrifying. It's like you're halfway between choking and not choking, just zip tied to a car seat.
Yeah, I used to get my head stuck between the stairs a lot as a kid, and it's not pleasant. It gives you claustrophobia.
Yeah.
Similar.
And then we get Charloris, who comes into the car here, and we finally get some insight into her goals. So Charloris says, it wouldn't be practical for us to replace all of you one at a time, and what kind of existence would that be for us? I want my people to be able to grow, flourish, to find their own identity. I have plans for your kind. All the while, the assistant to the regional manager is being attacked by flies, one of which eventually enters his eyeball to control him.
I think it's just the, is it not just the one fly that's kind of like flying around him that whole time and then finally lands and weasels its way into his eye?
It might be just the one.
I think in this case it was. So is that, are we to assume all that has to happen is the fly has to land on you and it can just get in anywhere?
Yeah. I've been,
eyeball, ear hole, nose.
I've been biking before and like I've had a fly hit me in the eye.
That's, I've had one go in my mouth.
My host.
Maybe it never came. That's what I'm saying. This is definitely daunting.
Yeah, so this theory gave me a crackpot, or this scene gave me a crackpot theory. Crackpot theory.
Crack. Crack.
I think Charloris's long-term plan here, I'm talking series length, like until the last season, last episode, I think Charloris's long-term plan is for all humans to eventually be enslaved by the hosts by way of the flies, and meanwhile, Delos will be printing a bunch of hosts to populate the world who all have free will, thus creating a new ruling species on Earth and making Charloris some kind of god figure. Except eventually, the hosts will realize they're actually kind of Charloris' puppet because they've been created by her plan, and they figure out they don't really have free will, and they all revolt against her and kill her, and that'll be the end of the series.
And it's just a circle. On and on it goes.
Uh-huh. And also, that will be the last Dolores to die, is Charloris.
It'd be pretty on the nose if they ended it with a human park, where the hosts have taken over, and they run the world, and then the only humans left are in a park where they have to act like cowboys.
Yeah, it's true. And then and this is also the, what, like, Golden Compass, like, killing God kind of shit. Killing God.
I never saw
yourself.
That one. Wasn't there a polar bear involved?
I think so. I had a polar bear mount in World of Warcraft. It was sick.
Wow.
Serena, thoughts? On my theory?
I like it. I mean, I feel like you and I are usually pretty in line on the crackpot theories, so.
Well, one of my crackpot theories was a joke, and you thought it was serious last episode. So.
Yeah, you were pretty in line there.
Technically, two of your crackpot theories were jokes because you made that joke about them keeping the Man in Black's head, and then I texted you like, "No, I think you could actually be onto something."
It just appeared. I guess it was his whole body just inside of a Tron suit. It wasn't just his head.
Yeah, it definitely wasn't just his head. And I think we learned that this week.
It was.
Yeah. Okay,
it was
fair. I'll.
That's a Tron suit.
It's a Tron suit,
and that's real Men in Black, right?
That's the real Man in Black. Yes.
Men in Black. Yeah.
Here come the Men in Black.
But it's real William, right? That's him living. Yes. William, kept alive, still a human being with a beating heart in a Tron suit, correct?
Yeah, I think I think his heart is assisted in beating. I don't think he's like alive in there. I think he got his throat slit and then they stuck him in there and then they hooked him up to a bunch of like ventilators and
blood. So it's just a thing keeping him alive.
Yes,
though.
Yes. Well, we can talk about that whole scene
maybe
now.
Maybe healing him. We don't know. Maybe you can walk out of there. We'll see.
That scene, I think, with Charloris standing in front of the flayed Man in Black, I think is the biggest episode or biggest scene of the episode.
Why has he got to be flayed?
What's the Ramsay Bolton line?
You just keep flaying everybody. All you have to do is do the Y from YMCA, and Jared thinks you're being fucking flayed.
Being flayed.
They talk about in the post-episode thing, though, that they wanted to do, you know how they have the original, like, you know, obviously Westworld man symbol thing,
yeah,
that's in the opening credits and shit, and they wanted this thing, this like William cocoon, to resemble that, and they actually built it. None of it. The smoke, none of that shit is CGI. None of it is computer effects. That's all, that whole scene, the whole fucking thing, the way it moves, all of it is real, which is cool and also completely insane. It reminds me of like Serena going and reading Emily Dickinson's entire catalog to understand the description of the episode, or reading that entire book like she did last season. These psychos could have just computer generated this shit, and they were like, we must fucking build it. Now they just have that somewhere? This fucking William cocoon?
To that, I didn't know that it was actually real. To that I say, flamey daddy. Stick me on that fucking thing.
Damn.
Okay.
You just want to get flayed.
I just want to get flayed. What's the famous Ramsay Bolton line from World or from
Game got a
of
lot
Thrones?
Of them. I don't know. What do you, I don't know. What do you, which one? What do you thought? What are you asking?
I guess it's not a line. Just picture him holding a sausage.
If I Google famous Randy Bolton line, do you think it's going to pop up? No, these are all about rape.
Oh, so that's okay. I guess he was known for that.
Let's not go down the Ramsay Bolton rabbit hole right now on Google.
So Charloris tells the man in black, "You're just here to be the loser," which is actually why Serena and I have Ross here on Friesel Motor Functions.
That's true. That's true. But doesn't this mimic the line from season one where the man in black tells Dolores that, I believe?
Yeah.
At one point?
Yeah. It's definitely a callback to one of those things that he's done.
One of the 20 times we got to watch him kill her in season one, I'm pretty sure he just tells her straight up, like, you're just here to be the loser.
Yes.
Yeah.
And Charloris tells the man in black she's keeping him alive so she can do to him what he did to her and all the hosts. Williams.
There's my people park, Jared.
People park. I'm down. I'm down to go to the people park. Are we allowed to? Do you have to be a host, probably?
I'm anti-people park. I just want to be clear about that. Anti-people park. Jared, pro-people park, weirdo. Me, anti-people park.
I think the world is technically one big people park.
That's fair. We all live in a yellow submarine, Jared.
So William's guess is that Charloris is going to copy herself to repopulate the world, thus creating a world full of Charloris's.
Which sounds awful.
Yes. That sounds absolutely terrible.
Just you everywhere? Like, being one you's toughen up.
I know. And I don't want to, like, interact with me. Like, I
yeah,
am me.
Fuck
like
that. What? Just talking to me all day?
That sounds terrible.
Different versions of me, varying levels of annoyed and pissed off. I don't want that. Fuck that.
And, like, you would know whenever they were being passive aggressive. You're like, fuck, that's what I would do. You
exactly.
son of a bitch.
Yeah, you'd know you too well.
Yeah.
Right? Plus, you can't fuck you. Well, I mean, if you, I guess that'd be appealing to some people, probably.
So Charloris responds that it'd be pointless to do that with humans just there waiting to kill them. So she had to, quote, make sure you people, humans, would never be able to harm us, the hosts, again. And then.
How, though?
I see, that's what I don't get. She's like.
By making them hosts?
We cut your claws off. Oh, we had to get.
Yeah, what does she mean? Like, we lobotomize you with the fly?
I think. Serena, do you have any thoughts on that? Because that still confuses me.
I think the goal is to enslave the human race. And that, again, this comes from that activation event where the messaging was like, we are pleased, you serve us.
Yeah.
And there's that crazy guy who's talking about the chime and the chime is killing them. And I think the goal is to install as many hosts in power as possible and then enslave the human race, making a world where the hosts are the free and sentient being.
I wish they would just have her say that shit. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I fucking hate when she's on screen at this point. Her character's always beating around the bush, laying out all these fucking weird, vague threats. Like, just tell us what you're doing, lady.
Yeah.
Nobody's stopping you. Come on. Just hit us with the facts.
Season one, we had Anthony Hopkins doing that. But for some reason, when it's done in like by an old British man, it's less infuriating. Because I feel like she's just as intentionally ambiguous as he was. Like, I feel like decoding what she's trying to say this season was us trying to figure out what the fuck Anthony Hopkins meant in seasons one and two.
Yeah, but it always felt like, I mean, that's a really good point, and I think it's one of the differences between season one and everything since, is that you sort of had this central, this Oz, right? This dude behind the curtain who you knew was in charge, who you wanted to know his intentions. We haven't had that since. We're just like, who is this? Which one of them is this, even, that I'm looking at? And then what? Why can't she say something that's a complete sentence with an actual fucking thought in it? She's just got to lay out riddles.
She also didn't answer my question of why doesn't she just kill all the humans? Like, that would also
make them not. It?
Yeah.
She's like, but we can't kill you all, but I've got a purpose for you. But also, we've declawed you. And it's like, well, what the fuck have you done? Just tell us. Because, I mean, and it's okay if you show us eventually. But if you don't, then we're going to be pissed because you're making us ask these questions and you're laying out all these things. It's like, well, give us some of the riddle later then, right?
Yes.
Which has been one of the issues we've had in the past, is not enough answered questions.
I think she doesn't want to kill all the humans because it's too easy. I think when she had her whole, she cared about Charlotte's family and she tried to run off with them and they blew them up. Now it's not just about freeing the hosts. It's about freeing the hosts in revenge. And what good is a lot of people will say that like death is too simple. I think she wants the human race to suffer, and she wants the human race to feel what she felt when she was a pawn in the human game. And I think to just kill them all, it's like, okay, well then it's over. But she wants to draw out the suffering.
That's a common use thing, I feel like, in really good storytelling, especially where you'll have there is some version of wrongdoing, like where somebody can do you so wrong, somebody could do something to you that's so evil that you don't want to kill them, you want to keep them alive so that they have to deal with that guilt for as long as possible, right? It's like the age old argument at this point between like the death penalty and not, like, is it more punishment to keep someone alive sitting in a cell thinking about what they did or all the things they don't get to do anymore versus just killing them right there, because that's a release, right? That's like, that's the way out or whatever. So it's an interesting thing. And well, I mean, it just brings up that question. It's like, she's saying she's going to keep some of them and she's sending some of them to like be livestock basically. So how many, like how many does it take for her to be satisfied that enough humans are still alive and suffering that she's gotten what she wants?
I mean, I think, yeah, go on, Serena.
Sorry. I was just going to say, I think part of it has to do with right now she's trying to take down people in power. And I would say that probably if I'm in her shoes, I'm thinking the people that are the most responsible for me being in this position are the ones who have power. So those are the ones she wants to attack and replace first. And then everyone else is like, I mean, she used Anastasia, who really didn't do anything except marry a senator, as a pawn. You know, she put the flies in her and made her deliver a weird message and go crazy and kill her horses. But I think it's replacing the people in power because those are the ones most responsible for the position she's in.
It's scary that they've got multiple levels to this now, like the full-blown kill you and turn you into a host. They've got the stick of fly in you and you're somehow partially under their control. I do not understand what was going on with Anastasia when they find her in the stable full of dead horses who she's murdered. And then she's like, what happened to my horses? It's like, you all right? You know what I mean? Like, yeah. She's clearly in some kind of fugue state or detached from her person. So it's just, there's a lot going on that we're going to need answers to.
And I think that Serena's, as she said, her theory makes sense to me because, I mean, Charloris literally said they're keeping the man in black alive so she can do to him what he did to her and all the hosts. So I guess it's just like, how many people does she want to keep alive to go through that suffering?
And probably mostly people that she sees as in, you know, responsible for what happened.
Complicit.
Right? Yeah.
I had one more thing on this, which was, I thought the Ross, you were saying you didn't get what was going on with Anastasia in the barn. I'm not going to say I get it either, but I do think part of it was a callback to the way. So in season one, it was all about enslaving the hosts. And when they would have stuff go haywire, they would start to malfunction and whir, like the whole like whirring old Bill thing.
Yeah.
And I feel like what we're seeing with the humans now, and it's all, Westworld is all about loops, right? So the loop that we're in now is now we're seeing what happens to a human when they're put in that state and pushed to their edge and witnessing something horrible. You know, she sees her husband die and you see the suffering on her face. And then it's kind of like when they would find the Delos bot down in wherever it was they were keeping him during the fidelity tests, and he had like cut himself all up. So I feel like we're seeing these loops, and now the humans are doing that too. So
yeah, it seems like if you're,
I fully understand.
If you're kind of, if you're utilized to their purposes, right? If you're a robot that's serving in Westworld, and then you're kind of cast aside, not cared for, not recalibrated every week or checked in with or whatever, then you can end up in that space where you're just off being one of the wacky robots that's haywire in the park or whatever. Similarly to what Anastasia, her purpose has already been served, right? So it seems like they're probably not caring for her. She's still got that fucking fly in her brain somewhere. I love that. That's a great point. I think it is an exact parallel to what we used to see with the hosts that would go nuts back in the park.
So the flayed man in black then sees the host man in black, and then we cut to the host man in black at opening night, giving a speech and dropping the best line of the season thus far, in my opinion. I know some of you fear revisiting one of our company's darkest chapters, but to those of you, I'd say that chapter may have been dark, but it was also extremely profitable.
This is just the Jurassic Park thing over and over. These old rich fuckers cannot help themselves, man. You open a park, all the guests die, you gotta try it again a few years later.
Yes.
You gotta try it again a few years later, no matter how many times it goes wrong, no matter how many times the robots kill all the humans, no matter how many times the dinosaurs eat everybody.
You got to go again.
And then we get the reveal of Golden Age World, 1920s Golden Age in an area called Temperance with some great music. How pumped are you guys?
This was very funny, especially the reveal when he's like, our country went through a depression, a pandemic, all this horse shit, and then we came out and it was the roaring 20s, baby. And that's what everybody thought was going to happen with us, and it's just been horse shit. I mean, I guess we've got some years left in the 20s to see if that could actually occur. But so far, not a roaring 20s here in the 2020s for us, unfortunately. Fortunately, we will get to watch the roaring 20s play out on screen in Westworld. This is one of my favorite eras, man. I love the 1920s. I love Boardwalk Empire. I love that whole, you know, gangster film era, too. I love all that shit, so I'm excited for this. I don't know what the fuck they're going to do with it, but we'll see.
Yeah, I don't know either.
Serena, do you have any idea on what, like, in wrapping this up with your thoughts on 1920s gangster world, what will the purpose of the park be this time, you think? Will it be the same? Or isn't that a little obvious?
You know, I hadn't really thought about that, and that's a good question. My first thought when he flipped the lights on in the park, well, two things. It reminded me of the ceremony that Ford did back in, it was either end of season one, season two, with that whole performance, and shit went wrong very quickly. And two, it was like the nut moment, right? Like, this is, everyone wanted to go back to the parks. That was a big complaint about season three. We got too far from what made Westworld great, and here we are, episode two, and we're back in the parks. So I was more fixated on, like, they're really giving the people what they want, and I'm just excited to see where it goes. I haven't thought much about what that's going to be yet.
For sure. Yeah. No, I mean, this goes back to what I said too, like, with this even furthers my thought that they realized the error of their ways. They exited the parks, it bit off more than they could chew. We said it from the get-go. It's going to be a lot. That's a lot to handle. To create a whole world, and one of the issues has been out there in that world is we don't have a good feel for the context, right? Like, we're asking questions, is there a country? Does the United States even exist? Now we know it does. But, like, what is happening out there? That's too big of an area to occupy with story that makes it all make sense. So to kind of draw it back in, go a little smaller, get back into the parks, keep this thing controllable, keep your arms wrapped around the whole story, that's what we need, and this just felt like a further acknowledgement that this is where they need to be. This is what made the show great.
Now, to Ross's point, I do think that it's the exact same thing, the purpose behind the park.
Data mining?
Data mining. When they walk in, the host goes, which hat do you want? And they're like, we don't want fucking hats, you son of a bitch.
Yeah.
And they walk right on by her because they don't want their data mined now.
But the thing is, if the government, I guess it doesn't matter because he's knocking out the government officials anyway, but if he did it overseas first because he wasn't allowed to do it here, but now he, the guy who originally did all that, William, is actually in the Tron suit being controlled by Charlotte or captive by Charlotte, and there's another William off doing his bidding that's a host, right, that's actually doing what Dolores wants, a version of Dolores. I guess it doesn't matter anymore because there's no real consequences for robot William. Right,
but just remember,
he doesn't care how many people he pisses off.
This whole operation, this whole United States theme park is all put together by Charloris.
Right.
So it's all part of her plan.
So at this point, it's like, all right, if you think back to the way Westworld came to be, William and his company, and they wanted to do this data mining and all this crazy shit, right? So they build this park in China or wherever. Well, now you've got a completely different person in charge. That's the important distinction I'm trying to make. This is now, like you just said, Charloris using William to build a park in the United States to continue doing what he was already doing, but to a different end.
What if they make all the humans who go to that park hosts, and then when they leave the park, they're hosts?
I mean, that would be very, very easy, it seems, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Incredibly easy.
Yeah.
And it would be the people that she would want, the rich people.
And when they do the whole, like, check-in process, they say, like, you have to sign this waiver, like, a liability thing, and to let us use your data in beta testing. So that was the other first thought theater, is that's probably exactly what they're planning to do.
Let me jump to a question I have in the same realm. So when Caleb and Maeve end up going through that whole process, they go through the white hat, black hat, all that crap, and there's all different variations of ladies and men's hats this time, because you've got Maeve there with Caleb, not just some dude going through like we've seen before. what is going on there? Like, what? They were led to the park, right?
Yes.
Like, somebody, something, someone wanted them to go to the park, put them on this train that was actually the train to the park, like we saw back in season one and season two, with William when he originally went to the park. Like, what's happening?
Okay.
Who is this? Who? Why bring him back? And why? Like, when they're checking him in, last thing, you know, obviously hosts can tell when another person is a host or a person. You've got a host there, and you've got Caleb. We have to assume, we've given no reason to doubt that Caleb is still a human being. It's Caleb, Aaron Paul, a human being, blood inside of him, not a host, right? But then there's host Maeve. They still check him in. It just, the whole thing is weird. What the
only
fuck's happening?
Maeve can tell whether a host is a host or not.
Because she's got the power of yes. the, okay, got yes. that.
But
okay.
To your point, so the whole thing with Maeve and Caleb, you know, they go looking for Anastasia, find her in the barn.
Right.
That whole scene. And then Anastasia goes, clearly is at the behest of Charloris, who, here's what I don't get. Serena, I need your help here. Who the fuck is Don Giovanni? Is that somebody we've met before? Because Anastasia says that, like, Don Giovanni is inviting them to the opening night. The fuck is that?
Well, is it like because it's 1920s, is it like a mafia reference?
Ooh, I think Don Giovanni is Mozart.
What?
Yeah.
Oh.
And that's what they go see, a performance of Mozart's Don Giovanni.
Funded
by Delos. Yeah. That's,
okay.
Yeah.
Okay. I didn't know that was a Mozart thing. Okay.
So that's what they go to.
Got you. So what happened is Charloris, they know that Charloris is the one controlling Anastasia. So this was huge for me. Why? If they're like, oh, they keep trying to kill us. Charloris and William keep trying to kill us. Hey, Charloris and William are inviting you to this performance. And Maeve didn't even bring a gun. She's like, I mean, brain to kill people with.
It's like the James Bond thing. Like, James Bond would always get invited by the villain to, like, come to dinner, and he'd just go. And I was like, what the hell are you doing? It's because he would always know, like, he was going to beat the guy, right? Like, it's almost that level of cockiness with Maeve at this point.
Yes.
But what's curious to me, it's like, this is the storyline that I'm having the most difficulty following. Like, or the one I'm having the most difficulty finding purpose to. Like, I get what they're doing, sort of, but I'm not sure why. Like, is Maeve still looking for her daughter? Is Caleb... What's going on with them? They're trying to save the world, or what?
They're being hunted, and they're like, we don't want to live in fear.
We've got to go figure out. It is the Jason Bourne thing.
Yeah,
literally, we were in hiding. Now they're fucking with us. We have to come out of hiding to stop the fucking with us.
But I don't understand why they knowingly were like going into like, and they're just like chilling in
just
this.
Waltzing into the park though. That's the thing.
Number one, in the park, they could be killed in a millisecond. Especially Caleb, who's not even a host.
That's what this dude's just domed, like. Yeah, I'll go with you.
I don't understand why they are being so laissez-faire about this, about going to this event, about going into the bar, about going into the park. Like, what are you doing? Literally one sniper could just kill Caleb.
I mean, again,
he's dead.
I get it for Maeve. Not life is valued a little differently inside of the bot brain. This dude just got married and had a kid and survived a fucking apocalyptic war. Now he's just waltzing off into theme parks filled with robots. That just doesn't... And he's thinking about fucking him? He seemed like he was thinking about fucking that one. I'm just saying, she was like, and if you need me to help you undress, and he was like, well, fuck it, I'm already here. You know what I mean? And then Maeve had to give him the stink eye to get him to stop.
And by the way, if that host looked familiar, that was new Clementine back from season one. Which is why Maeve...
So this is not Elon Musk's ex-wife?
No, not that one. It was new Clementine.
Looks a little like her, though.
A little bit like her, with brunette hair.
Yep.
And that's why Maeve commented that she clearly got a promotion, because no longer is she a prostitute. She's a entry host.
I don't think it's the first time they've used that bit, either. Look, you got a promotion! One of the bots that used to be lower level that's now higher up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And if you guys had flashbacks here to season one because of the whole, like, entering the park sequence and the... What's it called? Like the bespoke clothes and that little anteroom?
It's exactly bespoke.
Remember this. This is episode two of season four, despite me saying the premiere in the beginning of the episode.
Sure.
Season one, episode two, was William and Logan entering the park and going through this exact same process. Same episode of the season.
Which makes me wonder if either of you have a feel for where we'll be next week based on episode three of season one. I don't remember. Might be a thing to check out, though.
It could be.
If they're using it as like a template, maybe.
Yeah. So my biggest thing with the whole Caleb Maeve storyline is just Caleb has a death wish.
Yeah. I'm not sure what his deal is. He looks like shit.
He does. Somebody did say that his hair looks exactly like William, young William, when he went to the park.
Oh, man, dude, that doesn't bode well.
No.
That's not that's not good foreshadowing for him. That's hashtag daunting right there.
Uh-huh. Well, and what's interesting about that, too, is that so much about of Westworld, and I talked about this a little last week, is about who you are at your, like, core in your human nature and whether or not that can be changed. And one thing we learned about Caleb last season is, you know, Dolores, actual Dolores, walks him out to that spot and goes, this is where you kill yourself. So there's nothing to say that he's actually veered off of whatever Rehoboam projected for him. It might not be that spot that time, but, you know, they kind of nod at, like, when he's doing his intake and they're like, do you have any history of depression or mental health issues? And he's like, well, why would that matter? Like, that was to remind you that he does have those things in his past. So when you say he has a death wish, and we know from last season that, like, his predicted ending was suicide, like, how much can you veer from that path? And I think that's, like, the question that Westworld wants you to ask always. So that's kind of what I thought about that.
I think they ask him that. I wonder, because I don't remember hearing that question ever before in season two or one regarding entry into Westworld.
They did ask that in season
they did.
One. Yeah.
Do you have any mental health or anxiety or yes. panic attacks?
Yeah.
No shit. Well, in this case, it would make sense because it's like, well, they don't want mentally ill robots, right? They're going to be turning these fuckers into robots. Mm-hmm. But yeah, just
I had a different take on that.
What's that?
I thought that they were asking that. And Jared, admittedly, I don't remember them asking it in season one. I'm sure that you're correct. I thought that they were asking it because everyone kind of knows that William went kind of crazy after the park. And they are trying to do this whole, like, it's different now. Like, we know we fucked up and we had that big slaughter, but, like, we're doing things better now. So I think that they're asking that question as, like, the, hey, like, you know, we're going to make sure this doesn't happen again. If you have a history of mental health issues, like, don't come play in our park.
I will also say, I will not give Jared the benefit of the doubt and say that if it is not ever asked before, then it's also kind of a hat tip to, like, mental health getting acknowledged more in our world in 2022, I think. Questions like that definitely get asked a lot more where they didn't used to get asked, right? Like, do you have a history of mental health issues or anxiety or panic attacks or whatever? But also, just to take it back to what we're doing back at the parks, the show's original question was kind of like, you just hit on it, like, at their core, are human beings good or bad? If you took a good person and you unleashed them in a park with no consequences, would they act decent? Or would they go do murder and all manner of horrifying fucking things, right? That was the original allure of the show. And now we have this guy that we've seen do nothing but valiant works, Caleb. Never been a bad dude. We seen him do a single fucking bad thing.
Well, he killed Francis, but...
His boy?
Yeah.
Yeah, but who even remembers that? It was season three. It's like a big blur. There's no reason to think that they won't just tee this guy up for sort of the same ride, right? And if they've already got him, you know, with William, he obviously... Did he choose Black Hat, right?
William chose white.
Or white, and then he turned black?
Right? Yeah.
I mean, it's the whole question of morality and whether or not people are good or bad, or if they can inherently change from good to bad or bad to good. And in his case, the refusal to wear a hat going in is just sort of beautiful because it's like once you've known enough people and eventually lived enough life, you learn that everybody has both good and bad in them. Nobody's black hat, nobody's white hat, everybody's a mix. And so that just makes it all the more interesting that he's going in metaphorically hatless with dog shit Spider-Man 2 Tobey Maguire emo hair.
I'm giving myself the benefit of the doubt. I feel like they did ask that in season one, and I'm sure nobody's going to check that and call me out if I'm wrong. This episode of Freeze All Motor Functions is also brought to you by the amazing folks at Felix Gray Glasses. The good folks at Felix Gray create effective, research-backed products to improve humans' relationships with technology, making them a perfect sponsor for a Westworld podcast. It all started 5 years ago when Felix Gray set out to create eyewear that would make it easier and more comfortable for humans to stare at screens, probably hosts too. Why? Because whether you like it or not, we all live in a digital world. And living in a digital world means we are forced to look at screens, screens, and more screens all day, every day. I have currently 1, 2, 4 screens looking at me here in the studio.
Can't get away from them, Jared. They're everywhere, just burning holes in our eyes.
Burning holes in our eyes. The blue light emitted from these screens is the culprit and doing the burning. And Felix Gray's clear blue light lenses filter 15 times more blue light than other clear lenses. 9 out of 10 customers experience relief from eye strain, headaches, and or blurry vision. I wear them. Ross wears them. My mom wears them.
I wear them constantly. Every night, every day when I game, I wear them because it just feels much better on my eyes. I've been wearing contacts and glasses for like 20 years now. And they're phenomenal. Felix Gray, the only glasses I wear, man. They protect me from the blue light that all these screens you and I stare at all day emit. For a lot of us, that's the way it is, man. It's hard to get away from the screens, but you can protect your eyes with Felix Gray glasses.
They're also very high quality and built to last. And when I say, like, they have a lot of products. They got sunglasses. They got clear blue light lenses. They got amber blue light glasses.
They got glasses for nighttime before sleep.
All of those. Sleep. Phenomenal. Felix Gray has both non-prescription glasses and prescription glasses available, so they truly are for anyone and everyone. Check out Felix Gray's full selection at felixgrayglasses.com/famf, F-A-M-F, where you will have access to free shipping, free returns, and free exchanges for a risk-free shopping experience. That's felixgrayglasses.com/famf, famf,
famf. And just to be clear, I'm blind as a bat, so I badly need these to see, especially if I'm using a computer and don't have my contacts in or whatever. But you do not need to be blind as a bat. You could have perfectly good vision, and your eyes are still getting wrecked every day by the screens, and these will help you big time, I promise. It's like for old people, you know how they get reading glasses and shit? Everybody needs these for their eyes if you're using screens all day. felixgrayglasses.com/famf.
And the last storyline we have to cover is that of Christina. This time when we cut to
Xtina, Jared.
Xtina, sorry. This time when we cut to Xtina, she's laying in bed, but she's already awake, signaling a shift from last episode.
She's so woke, Jared.
Very woke.
Wow.
She's woke, and she's thinking about Peter. She tells Maya that she couldn't sleep last night because she was too busy thinking about that guy, which is what I tell my fiance every morning because I can't stop thinking about Ross.
I also spend a lot of time thinking about Peter. As a metaphor for dick.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Christina then realizes she may have written a story similar to Peter's and goes into work. On her way in, though, she walks by the crazy tower-talking guy who lives on her way to the office. This fucking guy.
Still out there.
He says, "Do you hear it? The song with no sound. It's killing them. The noise, do you hear it? The tower. It's coming from the tower. You think I'm crazy, huh? No one can hear its music besides me. Me and the birds."
All right, fuck this guy. This character's been done too many times. There's always some wacky fucking person experiencing homelessness yelling out clues in the dystopian future or whatever. We don't need this. I'm already annoyed by this dude. We're 2 episodes in. I can tell he's not going away. 3 weeks from now, I'm going to be yelling about this dude. I can just feel it in my bones.
Well, the thing about this guy is that he seems to be onto something, because Christina then sees a bunch of dead birds outside her office building, which could be because the skyscraper was not designed to be bird-friendly, which, if you want to learn more about that...
You got to do that. You got to make them bird-friendly, Jared.
There's a great episode of 99% Invisible on it, so I just had to go 2 for 2 on 99% Invisible references.
Got
to
keep plugging it.
Got to keep plugging it. Great podcast. Serena actually got me onto it. Something that must be noted here. Remember how birds tied into the title of the last episode, The Auguries? Do you remember?
I remember you trying to make that a thing that I would remember, but failing.
Okay. Very quick recap. As a reminder, an augury is defined as the work of an augur, and an augur is defined as a religious official who observed natural signs, especially the behavior of birds, interpreting these as an indication of divine approval or disapproval.
An augur was some jackass who would watch birds as a sign from God.
Yeah. They'd be like, "Oh shit, look, seven vultures.
That bird just took a left.
That bird took a left.
It's going to rain today."
Yeah. Yes.
Yes. No gaze.
So this homeless man is an augur. And an augur, by the looks of it, is probably the nicest thing anyone has called him in a while.
Okay. Yeah, probably. I don't think he gets a lot of good conversational compliments in his day-to-day.
Christina tried to talk to him, and he didn't even notice her.
Well, I think he's troubled.
Yeah. So, finally,
He's got a lot going on, man. He's worried about the fucking tower. Birds are killing themselves and shit.
I'm just happy we got a bird tie-in finally after I tried to make it work last episode and it didn't.
Birdman.
Harvey Birdman, attorney at law. Remember that show?
I do. Somebody's actually been watching it on my HBO Max account. I'm not kidding. We can't figure out who it is. Fucking Harvey Birdman just keeps popping up in my watched, like, keep watching, and we do not know who it is. We cannot figure it out. It's starting to freak me and my wife out. There's just some fucking stoner watching Harvey Birdman cartoons on my account. She thinks it's me. She's like, it's you, and you just don't remember. I'm like, you don't think I would remember watching an entire... It's like on season 2, episode 7 at this point. I'm like weeks into this project, and I'd have no idea. There's just another Ross out there. It's fucking host Ross watching Harvey Birdman every night.
I still... One of my favorite half cartoons of all time... Well, because this is a weird genre, my favorite half cartoon of all time...
Half cartoon
is Space Ghost Coast to Coast. I had that on DVD. That is one of the funniest shows ever. You got Zorak, you got Space Ghost.
I used to watch that, Jared, and I'll be honest with you, I never really knew what was happening. Like, I feel like I was too late. Like, I showed up one day and was just like, all right, I'll watch Space Ghost, I'm high. And then I could never put it together. Like, I watched probably 30 episodes of Space Ghost over the years, just scattered. Never knew what was happening.
It might explain a lot about my personality that I used to watch that sober in middle school.
It does. It explains a lot.
And I liked it a lot.
I mean, because I remember that stage of life, like watching Adult Swim before I ever been introduced to any level of substance and just being like, what the fuck? Who watches this shit? And then doing drugs one day and getting home and watching Adult Swim and being like, oh.
I would say this.
But then there was you.
Space Ghost Coast to Coast walked so the Eric Andre show could run.
Yeah.
That is. I actually think that Eric Andre may have read an interview where he said that Space Ghost was like his biggest.
I'm sure a lot of those Adult Swim shows inspired Eric Andre. I would have to assume.
Oh, you gotta imagine. So next time that we see Christina, she is in New Jersey in a car and goes back and listens to an old pitch of hers and realizes she did in fact write Peter's story.
She killed that dude.
I mean, and she killed him in the story.
Well, yeah, why didn't she bring this up last week? She's like, oh, I gotta go listen back and see. Oh, yep, nope, for sure did have him jump off a building at the end of the story. You wouldn't remember that?
She must write so many stories if she just forgot that.
They're just all ending with people hurling themselves from buildings, right? And such? God damn.
So, by the way, her boss, total helicopter boss.
Yeah.
Looking at her location.
Yeah, man, fuck this guy. And the fact, I love this. There's a great line because it just makes you think even further about, like, obviously here at Bolin Media, we don't put chips in our employees or any of that frowned upon, not HR approved activity that goes on in some of these other futuristic tech companies. But it makes you think about where the world will go, right? Longer term. With technology, with all the tracking that we have now, will it eventually be a situation where, like, you know, if all this work from home stuff sticks, especially, are your bosses going to be much more actively tracking? Will the company be much more actively tracking to see what you're doing, when you're doing it, how much work you do every day, all that kind of stuff? And that's just terrifying for all of us who are procrastinators, you know?
And procrasturbators.
And procrastinators.
We find out Christina is in Jersey to visit the Hope Center for Mental Health, the cliche-named place mentioned in Peter's obituary that she sees is very rundown and, in classic American fashion, in the process of being turned into a mid-rise apartment complex.
Didn't go well. So where's this money going?
This trip there for Christina was very eye-opening. While there, she sees that there was an old wing in this mental health center that had already been dedicated to Peter Myers years ago, which confuses the shit out of her and out of us, but not Maya, who's acting very robotic, very Serena theory. Like, she's kind of just trying to kind of steer her away from her, leave well enough alone.
Oh, don't worry. Trust your instincts. Just keep going. Keep going. Everything's going to be fine. Why would you be worried? I'm a fucking robot.
But then, on her way out after listening to Maya, she sees a room filled with drawings of the tower, the same ones she saw the crazy homeless guy on the bridge draw before she heads back to Maya. And by the way, I do think she lives in New York City, not little New York City in San Francisco, because she did a day trip to New Jersey.
New York City.
Okay, I do not know what to make of this whole Christina storyline this episode. So, okay, I totally get. So she has written a story very similar to Peter's story, but this guy was Peter and he just died. But another guy named Peter had the same story and died in the past. What's going on here? Somebody explain. Serena?
I have a crackpot theory.
Okay, go.
Okay, so we had that listener submit a really interesting theory last week that I think it was that this is a flashback and we're seeing how the park came to be and Dolores is writing her own story as Christina. When this Peter Myers thing happened, because I had this listener's theory in my brain. I thought it was really smart. I was wondering, and this is a crackpot theory, if maybe Dolores left a version of her consciousness downloaded. It doesn't exist in a physical being, but we know the data that was Dolores exists in like a hard drive, essentially somewhere. What if this is her consciousness, like a projection of her own consciousness where she has to find a journey back to herself? Does that make any sense the way I phrased it?
Yeah, that makes sense.
Because it's like when they got to this... one more thing, Ross. The one other thing that made me have this theory is the fact that Peter has the same name as her father. And the loss of Dolores' father was like a big cornerstone moment for her. So in this is also, we're seeing a big cornerstone moment in Christina's life is the loss of a man named Peter. And so I'm wondering if it's her consciousness trying to send her like clues about who she was, and this is her like trying to find her way back to herself.
Oh, I would fucking hate this so much. This absolutely cannot be what's happening.
Oh, do you think it's OG Dolores, the one who died at the end of season 3? Oh man. So you're in your theory, OG Dolores is not dead and the whole end of season 3 meant nothing.
Well, she's saying that's a possibility, but I do think it is much more likely that our listener who brought that theory up is correct. I also saw that. I love that theory that Christina is in fact Dolores pre-park. Like the park, we're seeing Westworld come to be or whatever, that likely her roommate Maya is a Delos employee, and that somehow all of this ends with us seeing the beginning of Westworld season 1 almost, right? Or the opening of the park, while at the same time also seeing the opening of this new park in season 4 that's 1920s Gangsterville, and kind of seeing those things run side by side. But I just don't know how we fit all that. We got 6 more of these, right? We're a third of the way through. Fourth of the way through. Let me do that math again. A fourth of the way through. And that's a lot. So we'll see. But I love this. This whole Christina, her whole storyline here, it kind of got more interesting. It drew me back in towards the end of the episode.
Yes. The Christina storyline is clearly, in my opinion, the mindfuck storyline of this season, right? There's always got to be one. The other ones are pretty straightforward. Like, we've seen pretty much how the whole Charloris thing is going.
Mine is Maeve. My mindfuck is Maeve. This one definitely has some mindfuckiness to it, but it feels like it's something I can follow. Like, more so than Maeve and Caleb right now, where I'm like, I don't know. I don't really care what's happening with you. I want to see where this goes. I'm trying to figure out who the hell this is. Is it before? Is it after? Like, because that it always is an interesting question. How did they get the original host data? Where did that info come from? Before anybody ever came to the park, how did they build the first robots, right? So that would be an interesting way to go here, because I don't know if we ever got that answer.
I don't think Maeve's storyline is mindfucky. I just think that the only part of it I don't get is why they're so willy-nilly doing all this, but maybe they just are saying, fuck it, if we die, we die, but we don't want to live in fear. I don't know. This one to me, like, right now, you're telling me that we could be watching a flashback of some girl named Christina who was the influence for Dolores, or...
Not necessarily the influence, but, like, the data point, right? Like, they somehow take that chick and her real life, and they're doing something with her and her job...
Yeah.
To where, eventually it turns into Dolores.
Like, the origin, like, she is the original Dolores of a human who was made into a host. Or it could be, we could be all inside of a Dolores' brain as she tries to have another, like, there's so many different ways it could be.
Whereas, I'm still stuck on this line I want to bring up real quickly, but from episode 1, okay, of season 4, where the kids walk by and they're like, I can't believe this is your first time here, it's fucking sick. And that's in Christina's world.
where she is actively doing something that, if it occurred in the real world, would be magical. She's writing a story, and then a person, a real-life person, is living it. That's something that would happen in a Westworld, in a park, right? So maybe her whole shit is in a park. Maybe this has nothing to do with Dolores at all. I have no idea. It would be crazy to not have to do with Dolores, though, if you're going to have the exact same fucking actress. That's just too weird, too confusing. So I'm hoping it still connects, but there's just so much of up in the air for what Christina's whole storyline here in season four could be.
So that the tweet that we're referencing was somebody saying that they think, so, you know, Christina, C, Dolores, D. So you go C, D. You go Arnold, A, Bernard, B, A, B. So you got A, B, C, D going on there from when the human, real person later on becomes a host version of themselves. So that was one example they were giving of like, oh.
That's wild.
So maybe that what we're seeing is a flashback of Christina, who was the original human who later on became Dolores.
It'd be pretty perfect, wouldn't it, Jared?
Would be pretty freaking poignant. Perfect. Does anybody have any final thoughts here? Yes, Serena does. Go.
Sorry. There's two other things, because I really thought about that listener's theory as I was watching the episode this week. And there were two other kind of nods that indicate, I'm not even all in on my own crackpot theory. It was just something I had.
You have to be. That's like the definition of a crackpot theory. You have to be all in. Right now, admit it.
I can't, because there are these two other things that made me really think this listener was onto something. One of them was, we have the shot of the fly crawling on Navarro's eye, right as he becomes like infiltrated with the flies, which is a shot we have in season one where the fly crawls on Dolores's eye. So that could be one, maybe she knows too much, becomes too important, gets taken over by the flies, and then they use her data to make a host. And then the other thing was a line in season one where they were talking about the games. And one of the lines that comes up is, the game is meant for you. The game begins where you end, and it ends where you began. So.
Oh, like a whole loop situation?
Yeah.
Yeah. I could see that. I could see that as well. A lot of unknowns.
And she literally writes video games. So
yeah, true.
There's that too.
A lot of unknowns, but that is to be expected, as we are only two episodes in to season four. We got six episodes left.
I have one more thing to say.
Yes.
This all draws in a very interesting and relevant parallel to the metaverse stuff too, where when we talked about Westworld season one and the whole consciousness thing, right? Like, when in our human brains, you build a robot and then I beat the shit out of that robot, nobody's getting hurt. It's a robot. It doesn't have feelings. It doesn't have consciousness. It doesn't care, right? And that obviously is not the way things went. These robots do care. They did feel. They do have consciousness. They had achieved all that in some sense in Westworld, and it's what's made this whole series happen. But it draws into question that whole idea of, like, when you create a video game character or when you create a metaverse version of yourself, like, is there any substance to that? Is there anything that can be damaged there? Like, right? Like, can anything be hurt? Is there anything to, like, a virtual life, sort of? So it just with everything that's gone on the last few years with the metaverse, it kind of makes Westworld season four and this whole conversation of AI and you know, virtual reality sort of even more relevant again, and just makes it cool. So I'm hoping they found a way to sort of tap into that too. They bringing in the video game thing as her career really struck me as a possible, you know, just furthering of that conversation.
And before we go here today, I would like to announce the 10 winners of the June Rate and Review FAMF on Apple Podcasts contest.
Thank you all for participating.
Yes, we got many, many ratings and reviews. Super helpful. Helped us get into the top 100 of podcasts for TV and film on Apple Podcasts. By the way, contest is over. Keep rating and reviewing. We want to climb the charts, get more listeners by way of people looking for Westworld podcasts on Apple Podcasts, and ratings and reviews help very much. Without further ado, the winners, here they are. They were chosen by a randomizer from the list of everyone who left us an Apple Podcasts rating and review last month. You have FSX Blutz X BMLPO. You know, you got to change your name there, buddy.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Red O2, Murdakes, Josh Ibar, Rob Sand 92, MJ underscore 36, Brentonius, Gunterfelt, Mike 45801, and French Fry 2595. If I just said your Apple Podcasts account name, shoot an email to Jared at bolenmedia.com. That's B-O-L-E-N media.com with subject line FAMF contest winner, and we will hash out the logistics from there. By the way, we do have ways of confirming your account name, so don't think you can pull a fast one on us by claiming to be one of those usernames. We're gonna check it out.
We have ways of making you talk.
Congrats to all the winners. We hope you enjoy your upcoming FAMF prize packs. Shoot me that email. You can follow and should follow us on Instagram at FreezeAllMotorFunctions and Twitter and TikTok at FreezeAllMotor for Westworld and FAMF updates all season long. And if you prefer to watch your podcasts, every episode of FreezeAllMotorFunctions is also available on YouTube. That just generally goes up a few hours after the audio version goes up because you got to upload video and all that mumbo jumbo. Thank you, Ross. You want to plug some stuff?
Yeah, listen to the Ross Bolin podcast wherever you listen to FreezeAllMotorFunctions, and prepare for House of the Dragon coming at the end of August, the first Game of Thrones spinoff. We will be covering it on Oysters, Clams, and Cockles, episode by episode, week by week, all August into, September after August?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I know the calendar. And follow me on Twitter and Instagram, at WRBOLEN.
Serena, thank you for joining us. You plug your stuff.
Thank you for having me, first of all. I am at Serena underscore Therese, T-H-E-R-E-S-E, on everything. That's how you can find me.
You don't need to thank us for having you when you're a full-time co-host, just so we're clear.
I'm still happy to be here, but...
And but you can follow me on all social media, at Jared Borislow. And if you're a fan of Formula One, I have a Formula One brand called Formula Bone, because I am J-Bone, talking Formula One, that's Formula Bone. And I just released last night my British Grand Prix recap. That race was absolutely insane, and I help you process it. You can check it out on YouTube or wherever you're listening or watching to this episode right now. It's time for the NPR-style sign-off. Freeze All Motor Functions has been brought to you by Bolin Media and is hosted by me, Jared Borislow, along with Ross Bolin and Serena. The show is produced by me, Jared Borislow, at the Bolin Media Studios in Austin, Texas. Special thanks to Phil from DC, aka Schnapple, on SoundCloud for our intro music, and Brad Hess for our outro music. Until next time, folks.
Bamf!
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 Freeze all motor functions.